going to be a hard act to follow, but thanks. I guess I have to begin by saying that the phrase that you attributed to me was actually plagiarized, manufacturing consent. Yeah, it actually comes from Walter Lippmann, who's the, you know, the dean of American journalism in the 20th century. He thought it was a good idea. You know, he was coming out in favor of it. It goes without saying that anything that happens in the United States has an enormous impact on the rest of the world, last election, for example. And conversely, that's important to remember. What happens in the rest of the world cannot fail to have an important, in fact, crucial often, impact in the United States. And that happens in several ways. For one thing, it sets constraints on what even the most powerful state can do. But in a more significant way, what happens elsewhere, like here, influences the domestic component of what the New York Times ruefully described as the second superpower, namely world public opinion, after the enormous protests right before the Iraq invasion. It was the first time in hundreds of years of the history of Europe and its North American offshoots that a war was protested, and in fact massively protested, before it was officially launched. And that's a historic event, and it tells us a lot about where we've come, and should be encouraging, not depressing. Take, say, by comparison, the war, what's called the Vietnam War, actually the war against South Vietnam, that was launched by John F. Kennedy in 1962. It was brutal and barbaric from the outset. Began with bombing of unprotected civilian targets, chemical warfare to destroy food crops so as to starve out the civilian support for the indigenous resistance, programs to drive millions of people to virtual concentration camps or urban slums to eliminate the popular base for the resistance. By the time protests reached the substantial scale, 67, the highly respected and quite hawkish Vietnam specialist and military historian Bernard Fall wondered, quoting him, whether Vietnam as a cultural and historic entity would escape extinction as the countryside literally dies under the blows of the largest military machine ever unleashed on an area of this size. It was particularly South Vietnam, which was always the main target of the U.S. assault. And when protest finally did develop, many years too late, it was mostly directed against the peripheral crimes, the extension of the war to the north and the rest of Indochina. These were terrible crimes, but lesser ones. And it's quite important to remember how much the world has changed since then through deeply committed popular struggle. It's far too late in developing, but ultimately it was effective. The most interesting part of the Pentagon Papers, which is rarely mentioned for good reasons, is the last section. Pentagon Papers ends middle of 1968, and as many of you will remember, or maybe know if you're too young to remember, January 68 was the Tet Offensive, which convinced the corporate elite in the United States that the war just wasn't worth it, and the U.S. had won many of its objectives. It had destroyed any serious hope of independent, successful development in Vietnam, which was its main purpose, as in many other cases. And it was just becoming too costly for the United States, too costly because of the rising anti-war movement, which was compelling the president to fight what was called a guns and butter war. Couldn't declare a national mobilization, which probably would have been good for the economy the way it was during the Second World War, but had to kind of buy the population off because there were just too much disruption. And it was just becoming too costly. That was the Tet Offensive, the Pentagon Papers, you know, kind of record of the internal Pentagon history that Dan Ellsberg released. That was, it ends a couple of months after that. And it turns out that right after the Tet Offensive, the president wanted to send 200,000 more troops to South Vietnam, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff objected. They didn't want to do it, and they refused. And the reason they said is that they would need those troops for civil disorder control in the United States because of the rising protests among women, young people, minorities, in fact, a large part of the population. So it was just too dangerous to send more troops to Indochina. That continued and grew over the next 10 years. You know, elite groups thought they had it under control. When Ronald Reagan came into office, he tried to duplicate what John F. Kennedy had done in South Vietnam 20 years earlier. In fact, Reagan probably didn't know what was going on, but his advisors, his planners, just point by point duplicated it. This is 1981, and the target then was Central America under what was called, incidentally, a war against terror. Was declared in 1981, not in 2001. They had to back off because there was just too much spontaneous protest from church groups, from by then and all over the mainstream of the country, not just young people and so on. So they backed off and they turned to what was called clandestine war. Clandestine war is a technical term that means a war that everybody knows about except the population of the United States. And they don't know it for a good reason, which some people have something to answer for about. So the Reagan administration fought this clandestine war with a huge international terror network. So the cover War on Terror, Orwell would have appreciated. That was terrible enough. A couple hundred thousand people were killed, four countries devastated. But it wasn't B-52s, which are much worse. And it wasn't mass murder operations, which happened to be peaking in 1969, at the time when John Kerry was deep in the Mekong Delta in the south, which by then had been largely devastated. The popular reaction to even the clandestine war, which, as it was called, also broke new ground in history, another historically unprecedented development. That was the origin of the solidarity movements for Central America, which were coming right out of the mainstream. Thousands, in fact, tens of thousands of people from the United States actually went to help the victims. That had never happened in the history of European imperialism or its North American offshoots. And by now, they're all over the world. That's, again, something entirely new in Western history and another testimony to the success of these movements, of which there are many. And the state managers are well aware of it. When a new president comes in, first thing he does, has done, is an intelligence assessment. The intelligence community, as it's called, gives an assessment of the world situation. And George Bush, number one, he did it too. So in 1989, there was an assessment of the world situation, and a piece of it leaked. Somebody, usually we don't hear about these things for like 40 years, if ever. But a little part of it leaked and was published. It's kind of hushed up. And it was an interesting part. Somebody obviously in the Pentagon or CIA or somewhere didn't like it and leaked it to the press. It was a discussion of the kinds of wars that the U.S. would be fighting. Wars against what it called much weaker enemies. Those are the only kind of wars you fight, if you have any sense. Wars against much weaker enemies, it said, in the case of such wars, the United States would have to win them rapidly and decisively because there simply is no political support for anything more than that. It's not like the 60s when you could go on for years and years with no protest and destroy a country before it significantly develops. Well, that's significant. I mean, the world is a pretty awful place, and you can look at it and get pretty depressed, but it's far better than it was yesterday. And that's not only with regard to the unwillingness to tolerate aggression, but also in innumerable other ways, many of which we now just take for granted, which is good. We should take it for granted. But we should also remember that not many years ago it wasn't like that. There are very important lessons, and they should always be foremost in our mind. If we had a little more time, I I'd intended to say a couple of words about Canada's role in the Indochina Wars, which is pretty interesting, but I'll skip that. I'll say I'm being polite. But you should know about it if you don't already. It's pretty ugly.